We're speaking with Linda Angelo, who is currently the New York State Commissioner of Labor. Today is March the 15th, 2006, and we're speaking to her both about the Public Employee Safety and Health Act, which recently celebrated its 25th anniversary, and also about her experiences interacting with CSEA throughout her career.
And can I just interject? You're speaking directly to Steve. Forget the cameras here. Looking right at Steve. And we're not going to hear his questions when we edit, so if you could sort of incorporate his question into your answer, that would be very helpful. If he says, is it rainy or cloudy outside, you wouldn't want to just say cloudy. You'd want to say, well, today it's cloudy outside. Okay.
All right. And if we goof it up, I'm assuming we'll stop and try it again, right?
Okay. If he lets me.
If he lets you. Okay.
We're not going to worry too much about that. He has to edit it after the fact.
That's why he doesn't want it. He wants it nice and smooth and simple the first take, right? Well, Rob's behind him, and Rob used to produce some news stuff, so he'll know when we should start over again.
Linda, I wonder if you could remember when you first became aware of an organization called CSEA.
My first experience with CSEA is actually when I was a teenager. My mom was a clerk for the local government that I grew up at, and my graduation present from high school was a CSEA-sponsored trip that was to the Bahamas on an airline called Purdue Airlines, believe it or not. And that was my first experience. It was a wonderful trip. It was $200 per person, and we had a lovely trip to the Bahamas. It was my graduation present.
So that when you first started working professionally and came in contact, you already had familiarity with the organization?
Oh, I certainly did. I knew all about picnics and political action and a whole bunch of array of programs, I should say, that the CSEA sponsors.
Now you've had a lot of interaction with CSEA in various capacities.
Yeah.
I wonder if you might just give us a thumbnail of some of the different circumstances under which you had contact with the organization.
CSEA has shown me, and maybe I've shown them, varied sides to our personalities. When I first started working for the legislature, for Senator Trunzo from Long Island, CSEA, of course, was always there as part of their political action program, talking to us about legislation. And Senator Trunzo was chair of the Civil Service and Pensions Committee, so obviously we had a lot of experience together with CSEA, working on different political agendas and legislative agendas. So that was one part of it. The next part was when I joined the Pataki administration and became the director of the Governor's Office of Employee Relations. So needless to say, that was a different side, a different phase of CSEA that I got to see, which was the negotiations. And we had some wonderful times and some difficult times, but I think in the long run, we always came out with what was best for New York State, the taxpayers, and the employees. And then finally, now, as Commissioner of Labor, I see a completely different side of CSEA. I see the side of CSEA that has a heart, as its employees often do fund drives and different types of things to help the people out in the community that need help. And I also see them representing their employees and my employees. So it's an interesting contrast of how I've seen the many sides of the union over the years.
I wonder if you could describe what you see as some of the differences and similarities between CSEA and the other unions you've had contact with.
Well, you heard me say that I think CSEA has a heart, and I think it probably is the union that I've had the most experience with that does have a heart. It has always been there, the first on the line, always ready to be able to help its fellow members, other unions, and like I said, the community in general. I don't think there's another union out there that is responsive as CSEA has been. I also think that they probably are very responsive to their own members. Never mind the heart part of it, I'm talking about the pocketbook. So, I mean, they've been out there fighting for all the different types of benefits that CSEA members have wanted over the years.
Mm-hmm. I wonder, were you in the legislature, working in the legislature when the PESH Act was enacted?
25 years ago. Let me see where the PESH Act was enacted at 25 years.
79, 80.
Yeah, I probably was I just probably started working there when the PESH Act was enacted. So
you don't remember specifics about its enactment or how that came into play?
I can't say that I remember specifically how PESH was enacted, but I do know that it was a big deal. You know, I wasn't involved in the actual legislation at the time. We had a different committee, and I was, you know, I wasn't doing that part of the work for the senator at that time. But I know that there was a committee, and I know that it was certainly a very big deal for the legislature to turn around now and offer the same protections to public employees that were being offered to employees in the private sector under OSHA. So it certainly made an impact, but I wasn't involved in the actual act at the time.
So now, though, as a commissioner of labor, you have responsibility for overseeing the PESH program. What do your responsibilities entail as far as public employee safety and health is concerned?
Well, the PESH Act, of course, comes under the purview of the Department of Labor, and as commissioner of the Department of Labor, we have a lot, and I have a lot to do with making sure that there is an outreach program, that complaints are answered very quickly, and I feel that it's incumbent upon the department, and I've taken some of this on myself, to make sure that we act in a more timely manner. When I first came to the Department of Labor in 2001, there was always some kind of a backlog in all of our cases and all of our worker protection issues. I think that we've caught up on a lot of those. And now when someone calls with a complaint, we're usually there, as, if not the same day, if it sounds like a very serious complaint, within a week, I would say. So, yes, we're there and we're very busy, and I think that we have something like 2,000 PESH investigations that go on annually. There's something like 7,000 different sites and locations that are public employee-type locations. So we're out there, and there's a lot of ground to cover, but I think that we're doing a pretty good job now.
How important is this act for people on the job?
It's very important, and I think it's important because we need to know that our workers are safe, and we need to know that the public is safe. So the two things that come together in this PESH Act and under the PESH program is a place where the public and workers interact all the time. And we know that there have been incidences where there have been some problems, and I think that at this point in time, things are rather quiet. We've been able to make sure that most of our workplaces are safe and effective, and I think that it's important that workers feel like they can complain if there's a bad smell in an office and they think it's something that could be harmful to them. They can make a complaint. We will come out and investigate. And then it's incumbent upon the union, as it is incumbent upon the Department of Labor, to look at those reports that we get back from somebody who does an air inspection and say, you know what? You do not have a problem here. This is not something that's going to be harmful to you. Or the reverse, if it is something that could be harmful. So it's the union protecting their members, and it's government protecting its people as well, the residents of the state, which include, of course, the workers, but I mean the public and the workers.
Mm-hmm. So how would you describe the role of the unions in terms of interacting with the department? I mean, is there a constant dialogue that takes place over safety and health issues, or is it just an ad hoc when a problem arises?
Part of our negotiations, when I had my other hat on as director of employee relations, was we negotiated safety and health committees, and those committees are out there meeting constantly with either the building people or with whoever it might be in a different location. So that's one aspect of it. The second aspect is, as I said, once a complaint does happen, part of the PESH Act says that we, or whoever it is that's doing the inspection at the time, must give a copy of whatever that report is to the union. So there's protection there for the employee, and there's protection for the public and to the employer, saying, this is what we found. We're not making this up. So, you know, so that everybody can agree that this is, in fact, the facts to the best of everybody's knowledge.
Why is this an important issue for management as well as for labor?
You know, we all work in the same buildings, first of all. I mean, so if there's something wrong that's going on a job site, it doesn't only matter that employees need to be protected. I think management needs to be protected as well. We're all there and we're all in it together. So that's one part of it. The second part of it is you want your employees to be healthy. I mean, nobody wants to see employees out hurt for two reasons. One, you can't get your job done, and second, you just don't want to see people hurt. So that makes the most sense to all of us, I think.
I think, you know, as I read back about the enactment of the PESH Act, for a lot of our members, there was almost a lot of disbelief that you could have safety and health laws on a basis that was protecting private sector employees, and yet we had to enact special legislation in New York to ensure that public employees were protected. But that was 25 years ago. Today, there are still many states that don't have public employee safety health programs. Why do you think that is?
It's expensive. I mean, if you want to have...
Can we start that one over? Because really, nobody's going to know what's expensive.
Oh, right. Okay, sorry.
Okay, no problem.
Let's see, the question was, why don't other states have it?
Well, basically, why other states don't have public employee safety and health programs?
I would say that part of the reason there is not a PESH type of act in other states would be, first, they probably don't have a CSEA who is as active as they are here in New York in making sure that workers have that protection for their own employees. And second, it could be very expensive. There are times when there are different things that could be involved in a building, like removing asbestos or, trying to make sure workers have the right training or scaffolding or any of those other things that are big issues. Electrical issues, those are always a big problem under PESH or even under OSHA. To fix those problems sometimes can be very costly. So I would think that maybe some other governments and some other administrations don't care as much as this one does. And here in New York, how we worry about our workers as much as we worry about the public.
Okay. Let me go back to your experiences with CSEA when you were at GOER.
Sure.
You came to GOER at a time when there was a fairly unprecedented event that took place, which was that the CSEA members rejected a proposed state contract,
yes,
and kind of set off quite a protracted and public fight with the Pataki administration. What do you remember about those times?
Oh, I remember that negotiation of when the contract went down as being, first of all, a surprise to many of us. We worked very hard on what we thought was a good contract. And when I say we, I don't only mean my negotiating team, but I mean your negotiating team as well. CSEA worked very hard on a contract. It seemed obvious that we missed something. And I say that we're in that together when we do negotiations. It's not, and everybody thinks it's labor and management trying to negotiate and that there's acrimony at all times. Well, there isn't. We all want to make sure that there's a contract that passes. Otherwise, there's a lot of things that you do that are just a waste of time. So we didn't want to feel that way. So when we went back to that negotiating table, we made sure we found out what it was that we thought was problematic. And I think part of the issue there was some issues with pensions. And the governor at that point had appointed me to chair a public pension committee. And we went out and rounded up some people and some unions, as well as private sector and other governments. I think there was a representative from New York City to talk about public pensions and what we could do to change the pension system. And as you probably know, the results of that were some very significant changes in the way we do pensions these days.
Well, one of the things that came out of it specifically was that there was part of the contract agreement, there was an effort to secure legislation that would eliminate the 3% employee contributions. How did that come about? For individuals with more than 10 years
yes,
of service.
Yes, I was going to say, as part of the pension committee that was looking at what was, quote, overfunding in the pension system at the time, we looked at what it would take and what it does take to fund someone's pension over their lifetime. How many years of the state paying in and the individual paying into that communal pot, so that there would be enough money that would be invested to stretch out the payments over someone's lifetime, the actuarial tables. We came up with the idea that we thought 10 years of paying into a pot and investing that money would create enough of an account, so to speak, to pay for someone's pensions. When we realized that, when we had the actuaries come back and look at that and say, yeah, right now, the way things were going and the stock market was a lot hotter than it is now, but at that time, that was definitely the answer. So we were able to do that, and I think that that was a very significant change in the way pensions were administered in New York.
Sure. It was followed shortly thereafter by the enactment of COLA, which had been a CSEA goal for about a generation.
Yeah.
Do you remember the COLA issue coming up in the legislature when
you were there? I sure do. We had worked, the senator and I had worked on legislation for the COLA piece, and when Governor Pataki came in, I was still working in the legislature at that time, and I think that he needed a little bit of time before he could actually respond to legislation like that. So he vetoed the first pension COLA bill. And like I said, about 9 months later, I was working for the governor, and we had a conversation, and part of that conversation was we should do a COLA, we should do something about looking at the pension system as it is. So, of course, the next time it came up, after we had this report and some real good solid documents, and like I said, the actuaries agreeing with some of this stuff, we were able to have legislation that was passed and signed. And I think the governor was happy to do so at that time.
To go back to the contract negotiations, again, in 99 and 2000, it was a very protracted public fight, if you will. That was on the public side. What was happening behind the scenes? Was there civil dialogue going on?
Always. There's always civil dialogue that goes on behind the scenes in negotiations. I will tell you that Danny and I have always been able to talk to each other, to pick up the phone, and to have a conversation, so that whatever is going on at the negotiating table is always something that we're keeping our eye on. But at the same time, there are day-to-day things that need to be addressed. So whether there's a contract in place or not, there's always issues that come up, whether it be, you know, some kind of a specific attention to an individual that might need something with health insurance that's maybe fouled up, or, you know, some red tape that needs to be untaped, all those kinds of issues that come up that, you know, I will always say that the president of CSEA and I have been able to have wonderful conversations over the years about all kinds of issues that affect the membership, and I always say they're your members, but they're my employees at the time, so we can always talk.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I would imagine that for a lot of people, they might think that the dynamics of the relationship between the state and its unions are limited to the negotiation of the contract, but really the administration of the contract, I would imagine, is far more complex.
The administration of a contract is probably the hardest thing to do. Most people do think that, you know, just getting the contract in place is hard. Sometimes it's a little grueling to get all those I's dotted and T's crossed when you're writing a contract, but making sure that all those I's and all those T's that got crossed get actually put into effect the way they were intended when the contract was written is much harder. I think of you know, different training programs that maybe have been put in place over time, or EAP programs. I mean, and of course safety and health, but also things like the health insurance pieces. All those things have to come together for them to work right and for the contract to be put in effect the way it was drafted, and that takes constant attention.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you're in a position like GOER, where basically you are overseeing the workforce of the state of New York, there must be a lot of demands that are on you from a lot of different corners. How do you balance that?
Well, just as a union has certain demands that they come to a bargaining table with, so does the state. The state will listen to the agencies, particularly the HR people that come and create a negotiating team for the state. It's not just the folks that work at GOER. We reach out into the agencies and say, what are the issues that affect your agency that we need to bring to the bargaining table? And that's part of how negotiations are started and how demands get laid on the table. Just like a negotiating team from the union comes to the table after reaching out and probably talking to some of those same people. I mean, when you get to the negotiating table, you may realize that agency X has this problem and it needs to be addressed, and the unions come to the table saying it needs to be addressed, and usually management will come to the table and say it needs to be addressed. I mean, they may be looking at it a little bit differently, but resolving that problem is probably an important part of putting together a contract.
Okay. Well, let me ask you how you saw the different sides of CSEA. When you were working in the Senate, what was the role of CSEA in terms of coming and lobbying state lawmakers, and what kind of interaction did you have there?
When I was working in the legislature, CSEA was, particularly when I was, When I was working in the legislature, I think CSEA was always there. We always knew what CSEA felt about a piece of legislation, particularly when I was the committee director for the Civil Service and Pensions Committee for Senator Trunzo. CSEA would be in my office, particularly Fran Turner. Every week I would see her, and Fran and I would have discussions on almost every bill, I think, in the committee at the time. There were a lot of bills, let's put it that way. There was always a legislative agenda, and the focus was always on how do we get these bills passed? How can we negotiate these bills so that we can get them through the House so that both houses would pass a piece of legislation and it would have the support of the executive?
Well, when CSEA would come and lobby, when Fran would come in and talk with you and say, our members believe such and such, or we need to do this for these reasons and what have you, was the union able to substantiate that by producing a reaction from the membership that backed up what they were saying to you when they'd come in and talk?
CSEA would come in and say, we need a particular piece of legislation. I'm thinking of at this particular moment, I think this was a CSEA bill. There was a piece of legislation that talked about too many provisionals. And we need to do something about all the provisionals. And my immediate response would always be, tell me how many provisionals there are, how long do they remain provisionals, and what's the obstacle for them taking a test and being hired off of it. The good thing about CSEA is that when you gave them that challenge and said, if you want this piece of legislation, you have to prove to me that there's a problem. And they would always come back and say, in the town of XYZ, there are 22 provisionals out of the 60 positions that are there. They need to do something. Now, sometimes that didn't necessarily take legislation to fix. Sometimes the law is okay. It just took somebody to put some pressure on an agency or to just look at a town or whatever and have a conversation with them. And sometimes that fixed it, and other times, of course, you needed legislation.
Okay. How about back in the district? Did you hear from CSEA people back
Absolutely.
In the district?
Absolutely. when you're back on Long Island, which is, of course, Danny's hometown and my hometown, Nick Lamorte is there. And I think you can almost guarantee that when you want to talk about some characters out there, we certainly have them that we have on Long Island, both from the union side and from the political side. So, that's always fun.
That's a perfect segue. Why don't you tell me about some of the, starting with the Long Island characters from CSEA who you've encountered? And obviously, Danny Donahue would be a prime one.
I was going to say the prime one is probably Danny Donahue. Danny has, of course, started at Central Islip Hospital, which is now a court complex. At the time when Danny was there, there was a very large psychiatric center at Central Islip, at Brentwood, and there's another one in Kings Park. All three of those large hospitals now have closed. They were state facilities, obviously, so Danny certainly knew how his way around government, and he knew where to go and who to talk to. Their office was not very far from the senator's office on Long Island, so everybody always feels certainly at ease. They could always walk into the senator's office and have a conversation. So they would come in and say, okay, what are you going to do to stop this or start this or support that? And it would be kind of interesting to watch because there was never any guile. I mean, you know, no agenda other than to say, you need to help us. We have, you know, 5,000 people that work on Long Island. I'm just using that number off the top of my head. And we need to make sure that things can be done correctly here. And there's always the ability to walk into the office and do that. And Danny always felt comfortable doing that. And
how
it was a good part.
How did you see Danny evolve and grow over the years from being a Long Island president to vice president to president of CSEA?
Yeah. Watching Danny go from a local CSEA rep to president of CSEA has been an interesting type
Metamorphosis?
Yeah, metamorphosis, I guess. he's grown, of course, in the job. As the job grows, so does he. And I'm not talking about girth, so obviously that's not it, even though I could say I certainly have. But he certainly has broadened his horizons and realized how large the issues can be and how important it is when you have a workforce in New York State of over 200,000 people, I'm sorry, that you need to represent a wider, broader band of folks. And of course, CSEA being the largest public employee union, once you add in all the local government employees, he certainly has learned, it's a big state, which is one of the things I've learned since I started working for the Pataki administration, and B, there's a lot of diversity. And that diversity helps us. I mean, and it's truly an interesting and exciting way to go out there and talk to people and see how that works. So I think he's grown in that respect, too. You come from Long Island, you have a very small frame of reference in the world. You know, we're on an island, yes, and you really do feel that this is probably the center of New York State. And in some ways it is, and in other states it's certainly not. Like I say, the state is very big and very diverse, and it's fun to go out and to see that. And I think Danny's probably found the same types of experiences that I have when you go across the state.
What do you think are some of Danny's strengths that have served him well?
I think Danny has a lot of compassion. I think that as at heart, he knows what's right. He knows what's good for his members, and he knows what's good for the taxpayers, because his members are taxpayers. And him and I have had that discussion many times when I talk about how much it's going to cost for, you know, to put in some kind of a benefit or whatever it may be that CSEA would be looking for. I'd say, do you know how much that's going to cost the taxpayers? And he'd turn around always and say to me, but my members are taxpayers. And I'd say, you're right. So that was one of our classic little discussions that we would have, if you want to listen to different conversations that we've had over the years. But the other interesting thing about Danny is that he's always remained, and I think always will remain, a man of the people, as opposed to some other labor union leaders who I've seen become a little bit more above their own membership. I think that Danny always keeps his membership in mind and who his membership is and what it is they do. One of the conversations Danny and I had at one time was about training programs. And I remember having this very long, involved discussion about how we were going to do all these different things for some nurses or some of the other more professional types of members that you have. And I said, but Danny, you do realize that if we provide training for an LPN to become an RN, they're no longer in your bargaining unit. And his answer was, so be it. They deserve the training. And so that's the type of person I think that that I found in Danny, and I think that that's important.
Did you have interactions with Bill McGowan?
Not many. Bill McGowan probably was president of this union right around the time that I started working for Senator Trunzo. I know the senator knew him well, but at that time I was just, you know, a little legislative aide in the office. I wasn't the committee director yet. And I don't even believe we had the Civil Service and Pensions Committee, so I didn't know him, but I know that the senator did. So,
okay. How about Joe McDermott? Interactions with Joe McDermott as president?
Not really. I think most of my interactions with CSEA, certainly on a professional level, mm-hmm. have been with Danny.
Okay.
Our careers may have coincided to some extent.
Very good. Why do you think, I've asked this question of just about everybody we've interviewed, why do you think CSEA has been able to survive for close to 100 years?
Wow, I think that's pretty easy. I've said before that one of the things that CSEA has done is paid very good attention to their membership. They've never forgotten, as a union, that is, they've never forgotten what it is that they need to do to keep their members engaged and active and part of a vibrant union. And I think that's probably the real answer. You heard me say, like, this will be the third time now that I've said it, CSEA has a heart, and part of that heart is keeping their members involved, and they have a head, and they're shrewd bargainers. I mean, I know when we were at that bargaining table and that contract went down, and I was absolutely astounded. Ross Hanna came in and said, I'm really surprised it went down too, but when I think about it, I know why, and this is what we need now and came right back at me and was ready to sit down and negotiate again and start all over again from square one and figure out how it was we were going to get a contract that we could live with and, of course, your membership.
Great. Well, Linda Angelo, thank you. We appreciate you taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you.
Well, I can, before you stop, let me take a couple of pictures so
absolutely.
Sure and have them for her.
Excellent. the making of documentary.
Yeah.
That's going to be the toughest.
It is funny how Danny and I were kind of like, how many years has he been here now?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's like, it's the contracts have
paralleled your careers.
It's interesting.
Throughout it. But, yeah, it's like I say, it's a really fascinating story when you start to try to
Like you said, you don't remember half of it. I don't either anymore.
Well, you know, the other thing that's really just amazing to me, I mean, I've been here 22 years now, and every day I learn something new about the organization. And I mean, the enormity of what we do, the scale of what we do is just...
It's amazing. Really